So I wanted to just say something about the what you could call the wavelength of this Zen practice, which is really Zazen. What do I mean by wavelength? It's a kind of tuning your mind and body into something that is ordinarily not paid attention to in our everyday life. And in tuning into this particular wavelength, we are actually letting go of benignly neglecting the ordinary involvement that we have with the events of our life, trying to improve them, comparing them to other events, liking or not liking them, clinging to some, rejecting others, all of that. All of which is important for survival, but it's not the wavelength on which we do this particular practice. Why is that? Because what we are attempting to recognize, realize, tune into, connect with, has nothing to do with the particularities of whatever is presenting before you. If it's presenting one way, it's still manifesting this enlightened nature. If it's manifesting another way, it's still presenting this, manifesting this enlightened nature. So to pick and choose between the particular configurations of what is appearing before your body, mind, and Zazen is to completely be going off the wavelength. Let me read something which we've read before. And actually, this whole talk has been given before. I would say every time that there's a Taisho, it's the same thing. It's kind of like a one-track mind or a broken record. But we do need to hear it in different ways until it really penetrates. So this, again, is the Shinjin Ming, translated by my late teacher, Richard Clark. And I'll just read the first paragraph. The great way is not difficult for those not attached to preferences. When neither love nor hate arises, all is clear and undisguised. Separate by the smallest amount, however, and you are as far from it as heaven is from earth. So that is a beautiful poetic description of this wavelength that we are getting onto in our Zazen practice. So this great way is not difficult. All of us who have done this practice know how difficult it can be, oftentimes, particularly when whatever configuration is confronting our body-mind in the moment of Zazen that we're practicing is something we don't like, something that we're adverse to. Now, it may be a circumstance that we dislike. It may be a bodily sensation that we dislike. It may be a train of thought we dislike. It may be an entity that we're identifying with that we dislike. It's all of these things. We're human beings and we go through this process. So at times it seems very difficult, at other times it doesn't seem difficult. When what is presenting is something we like, then we tend not to resist it. So now we can more easily get onto the wavelength. But we're still missing something. So I want to read this again. The great way is not difficult for those not attached to preferences. Not attached to preferences. Not stuck on preferences. When neither love nor hate arises. When no judgment is made. No comparison is made to the precise experience in your body mind at any moment of Zazen. Then all is clear and undisguised. Now, what does that mean? It's clear and undisguised. What is clear and undisguised? What is this thing that's clear and undisguised? When neither love nor hate arises. In other words, when we are on the wavelength, when we are not reacting to what is presenting to our body, mind, in our moment-by-moment zazen, what is it that is clear and undisguised? You could also put it this way. If you are caught up in reacting to, comparing, thinking about the precise experience occurring in your moment-to-moment zazen, then you are not peering into, grasping, entering the nature of the experience. You're caught up in the content of the experience. This is what we do in our everyday life. This is our everyday experience. This is one of the things that makes the Great Way difficult, is that it's difficult only because we have a habit pattern of loving and hating, liking and disliking, being attached to preferences, all of which are necessary perhaps in certain spheres of life, including work, home, different things, maybe not recreation. But here, it's not about that, it's about finding out what the nature of the experience is, not its content. Now, how do we get to the nature of the experience? And this is this strange and subtle thing. We get there through the content. Now, Paul, what are you saying here? It's not about the content, it's about the nature. But how do you get the nature of the experience? You get it through the content. If you don't get it through the content, then you're thinking. You're trying to figure it out, which is back in being caught in love and hate and comparing and judging and naming. So this is a very subtle, very particular, very unusual wavelength that we are all learning when we do this practice. So we are not interested in toying with, manipulating, reacting to content. This is that dispassionate attitude of mind, which is an aspect of this wavelength. It's a dispassion that isn't a non-caring. It isn't a deadened state. It isn't an anhedonia. Something different. It's setting aside all the reacting to the content while we pay intimate attention to it. How strange. Intimate attention. Which means you really have to throw your arms open wide. Because a lot of what troubles us and which comes up in zazen are the things that we don't like, not necessarily the things we like, including our thought patterns, our habits of feeling and reacting, our ideas about the world and ourselves. That's the content of zazen in each moment, perhaps. And we are not to react to that content, but be very attentive to it in a dispassionate way, to discover what, why. Because we're trying to find out what it is, what its nature is. What its nature is. What does that mean, what its nature is? When we are caught in love and hate and like and dislike and judgments and naming, comparing, etc., etc., something happens. We retreat into a sensation of being a separated entity, peering out at a world that we're naming, judging, reacting to, clinging to, and the world becomes solid and out there. Feels like it exists, it stands outside. This is the fundamental lesion of the human being, the fundamental lesion, the very source of the deepest suffering and despair. And what comes from that are all sorts of negative outcomes. I could go through them, but you already know them. I was working in the ER today, and I went from room to room seeing people suffering terribly, terribly. and having made very bad choices in diet and smoking and substance abuse and stresses in their life, and their bodies broke down, and many of them were very, very obese, had COPD from years of smoking. Why are people doing this? Trying to get the perfect configuration, but you can't. So this deep frustration comes from that. And as a result of that frustration, it leads you into temporary fixes. Eating more than you should. Smoking, drinking, substance abuse, depression, stress, all these things. This is a reality of life. Now we see it on the world stage, in the political sphere, in the sphere of war, terrorism, bombings, killings, shootings, all of that. So it's not a subtle thing. It's a very serious thing. It's a very deep thing. There's a deep lesion there. How do we heal it? How do we repair it? This is all about this wavelength, this subtle wavelength of not opposing or clinging to the world as it presents, even with all its difficulties, frustrations, all of it. But utilizing that to peer into its very nature, what it is. What is it? So remember, I've said before, it's not what the configuration is. It's what the very nature is. What the very nature is. So I'm going to read a koan now. And this deals with this very precisely. It's a famous koan. I've read it before, but not for a long time. So, keep in mind this wavelength, and keep in mind this shifting from contending with and entangling with content to using content to peer into the nature of things. So this is from the Mumon Khan, and it's the koan number 30, and the title of the koan is Mind is Buddha. And this is the case, and it's very short and to the point. Daibai once asked Basso, "What is Buddha?" Basso answered, "Mind is Buddha." That's the koan. Now Daibai, this was probably when he was a young monk, but later became a very well-known Tang Dynasty Zen master, and he features in some other koan. And Basso is one of the greatest Zen masters of the Tang Dynasty. He was a very intense and vigorous guy, a lot like Uman and perhaps Rinzai, that I believe followed him, but he was a student of Hyakujo. He came to his enlightenment initially when Hyakujo gave his nose a very hard tweak. It's the pain of that. Something broke open for him. So this is something that Basso would say repeatedly when asked about this profound question. What is the nature of this reality? In other words, what is Buddha? Another way of thinking Buddha is, what is awakening? What is being the awakened one? What is that? What is the nature of that experience? Now, I've described this before, but there's a pictogram for the Buddha in Chinese, and if you look at it closely, you can see that it is two vertical sheaths, or sheaves, I guess you would call it, of wheat that are bound together, tied together. So remember what we said, that when we begin to engage in love and hate, judgment, liking, disliking, attachment to preferences, comparison mind, the world splits into two. We become an entity with characteristics, and the world becomes something confronting us outside, self-existing, independent, solid, impenetrable. It's kind of like the koan that I mentioned last week of the duck caught growing inside this bottle. The duck is trapped in this bottle. This bottle surrounding and choking out this duck. This is what happens when we engage in this. So someone asked Bazo, this monk who became a master himself, Daibai, what is Buddha? And Bazo answered, mind is Buddha. It's also translated in a little different way, which I actually prefer. It's this very mind is Buddha. This very mind is Buddha. It's pointing at something. This, thus, mind Buddha. Thus mind Buddha. Thus mind Buddha. What is the nature of this thing that is ever exposing itself through observation? Now remember what I've said before in this teaching of quantum physics, that the world is only the world when it's observed. It requires observation. So things are potentialities, but they only become realities during an act of observation. Now, a scientist might think that there's an observer and an event. But in Zen, we go way past that. The observer and the event are not two, are not separated. Events, meaning reality, is observation, is, in a sense, known. It's not known. That would be when we're thinking and judging. And we separate out and we perceive a world. So Dogen put it this way. He said, using oneself to experience the coming of the manifold dharmas is ignorance. Using oneself to experience the coming of the manifold dharmas, and this is a small d dharma, meaning sounds, smells, tastes, touch, thoughts, feelings, emotions. Using oneself to experience those, which is our ordinary state of mind when we're contending with the world, is ignorance. So what is enlightenment? This is what Dogen said, and we'll put it in the context of this koan. Dogen said, using the coming of the manifold dharmas to experience oneself is enlightenment. Using the coming of the manifold dharmas to experience oneself is enlightenment. Basso put it this way, this very mind is Buddha. This very mind is Buddha. What is this pointing at? What kind of intimacy? What kind of absoluteness, meaning no two, no division, no separation? An observation is this collapsed cloud of probability. It became just this and nothing else. There's no room for love and hate here. There's no room for like and dislike, for comparison, because it's absolute. In this moment of observation, it's absolute. There's no time, there's no space for any reaction, any contending, any entanglement in this space, which is called dhyana, absorption, which is the very root word of the name Zen. So if you want to say, what is Zen? You would also say the same thing. This very mind is Buddha. This very mind. So let's go a little deeper into this. There's a commentary here. If you have grasped Buddha's meaning... It's interesting, uses this word meaning. If you have grasped Buddha's meaning, you are wearing Buddha's clothes, eating Buddha's food, speaking Buddha's words, doing Buddha's deeds. That is to say, you are Buddha himself or herself. But though this may be so, Daibai has misled not a few people into mistaking the mark on the balance for the weight itself. The minute the word Buddha is used, he said, what is Buddha? The minute that is used, now there's a concept that there's something that I'm not, that I need to become. So I begin to engage in preferences, love and hate, like and dislike, comparison-mindedness. Most profoundly, I dislike the self I am because it's not Buddha, and it needs to be changed. So my zazen becomes a self-improvement task, enterprise. What I sometimes call a fool's errand, because you'll never get there. This is like the duck trying to smash the bottle, but you can't get through it. You can't do zazen and make yourself into this kind of notion of perfection. So this is the danger of even using the word Zen, Buddhism, Buddha, enlightenment. This is what makes me so uncomfortable when I talk about it in this way, and I always have to couch it and explain it. So he says here, though this may be so, Daibai has misled not a few people, a lot of people. What people? Zen people. Into mistaking the mark on the balance for the weight itself. He doesn't realize that if we explain the word Buddha, we must rinse out our mouths for 3 days afterwards, because we've added something on. We've made something special. Now we have an idea. Now we have to contend with it and struggle with it. If he had been a real man, when he heard Basso say, mind is Buddha, he would have covered his ears and rushed away. Interesting. Real man means if he was truly awakened, real, not a ghost attached to ideas and trying to become something that he feels at that point he isn't. Using his practice, struggling to become this thing. Had he not been doing this, had he already understood what the nature of reality is, when Basso said, mind is Buddha, he would have ran away. Here's the verse, and this really points directly now. So many koan in Zen are poetic in this way, because only through this poetry can we begin to get the flavor of what is the nature of, not the content, but through the content, the nature of reality. What does he mean when he said, mind is Buddha? This is what he means. This is the verse. Under a blue sky in bright sunlight, one need not search around asking what is Buddha. This is like hiding loot in one's pocket and declaring oneself innocent. I'll read that again. Under a blue sky in bright sunlight, one need not search around. It is directly there, shining in each moment. The moment you search, the moment you begin to look, you've missed it. It's gone. Asking what is Buddha, this is like hiding loot in one's pocket and declaring oneself innocent. This is like being something but pretending you're not. Being already whole and complete, not separated, but believing you are. And then going through the machinations of trying to become what you were originally. This is what he means by hiding loot in your pocket and declaring your innocence. It's wonderful, these pithy, ironic statements of these Zen masters. So returning again to this wavelength, when we enter our zazen state, we become aware of sensations, including thoughts and emotions, bodily sensations, memories, all of it. These are the manifold dharmas that Dogen spoke of. We begin to notice a naming and a reacting in the old habitual patterns, but we don't let that stop us because those too are sensations. So what we do is we simply drop off any meaning that we might give them and observe them as they appear, completed, collapsed clouds of probability, because they've been observed and they're done. So my wonderful teacher, Richard Clark, used to say, if you said to him, I'm feeling this way, he'd go, so? Such and such happens, so? Okay, this is the attitude of mind. So what? I don't need to react. But what is it? What is its nature? In opening ourselves to it attentively, we begin little by little to peer into the intimacy of these things, how they cannot in any way be separated from the knowing of them. They are the knowing, and the knowing is them. Mind is Buddha, and Buddha is mind. It can't be separated. This is the wavelength that we enter when we do our zazen. So we'll end there today.